Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps, and thanks.
Although its eruptions have subsided, Alaska's Mount Redoubt continues to spew volcanic gases and ash. That has some locals worried, because below the volcano is Cook Inlet and a Chevron oil storage facility. Bob Shavelson is the executive director of Cook Inlet Keeper, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting the inlet and its watershed. He joins me from a studio in Homer, Alaska. Mr. Shavelson, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you, Jeff. My pleasure to be here.
Now, give us a feel for the lay of the land here. We have this volcano, which is quite active. About how far from the volcano to this oil facility?
Well, it's approximately 17 miles from the oil tank farm that's operated by Chevron to the peak of Mount Redoubt. But the tank farm sits in the Drift River Valley, which provides a conduit up to the volcano. So when you get the pyroclastic flows from the eruption, they produce these lahars, which are the mud and debris and water and ice flows that come down. They've been described by experts as moving walls of cement.
And I guess you're putting two and two together here and thinking, boy, if that hits the oil facility, that's a bad situation.
Absolutely. You know, Cook Inlet sits in the Pacific Ring of Fire. We've got five active volcanoes in our area. We're also the oldest oil and gas producing region in the state. So it's not like these situations haven't arisen before. In fact, in 1989 and 90, we had the exact same scenario where an eruption of Mount Redoubt threatened this very same terminal and posed a significant threat to the fisheries and the people they support in Cook Inlet.
And tell me more about Cook Inlet. Why is the water there so important?
Cook Inlet supports all five species of wild Pacific salmon, and the salmon and halibut fisheries here support countless Alaskans. It's very important for the economy here.
Do we know why Chevron put the facility there in the first place? It seems, if you knew the nature of volcanoes, you wouldn't want to be right there.
That's an excellent question. I've heard it probably hundreds of times in the past couple weeks. The facility was sited in the 1960s. And, you know, this was before a lot of our major environmental legislation, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, had been installed. And there was a different mindset then. From what I understand, it was simple geography. They wanted access to deeper water, and they also wanted to be out of the heavy ice and tide conditions that you find further north in the inlet.
And how much oil are we talking about? How much oil is kept in those big tanks?
It fluctuates. And one of the problems that we had with this situation was that prior to the eruption on March 22nd, we weren't able to find out how much oil was in the tanks. In fact, Chevron refused to reveal it, and they cited the Homeland Security Act, and they also refused to reveal something called a volcano readiness plan that presumably would have told how they were going to deal with a catastrophic spill from this facility. But then on March 22nd, when the volcano erupted, a press release went out, and we learned finally that there was 6.3 million gallons of oil sitting at the base of the volcano. Just about half of the volume of oil that spilled with the Exxon Valdez.
And if there were an accident of this nature, how would they deal with an oil spill?
Well, that's a really good question, because from our perspective, there's no technology that would be suitable to address a spill in this scenario. We already know that it's virtually impossible to clean up oil and ice. When you think about a lahar-induced oil spill where you would have mud and debris and ice and these things pushing these oil tanks and all the oil in them out, we don't have the technology, the spill removal technology, to address those things.
What do you look to as a more permanent solution here?
We would prefer to see a pipeline that would reduce the risk of shipping the oil.
Now, I guess if I were Chevron responding to this, I would say, look, we've been here 40 years and we haven't had an accident. Therefore, that proves we're safe. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's what we heard from the oil industry prior to the Exxon Valdez. And one of the lessons we learned from the Exxon Valdez is that you can't be complacent. You have to plan. You have to have the resources available to address these contingencies that we know that are there. The 1989-1990 eruption of Mount Redoubt showed very clearly the risk posed by this scenario. Yet we did literally nothing to address them. So we've had a repeat situation here in 2009.
Bob Shavelson is executive director of the Cook Inlet Keeper, and he's been talking to us about volcanoes, oil, and water, and why he hopes they never mix, right?
And fisheries.
And fisheries. Thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. My pleasure.
Now, we contacted Chevron, and they sent a statement. It reads, in part, Chevron will determine if there's a safe and economically viable method for shipment of crude oil from the Cook Inlet operations to market without relying on the storage tanks located at the Drift River Terminal. Just ahead, replanting the gardens of a medieval city. Stay with us on Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.